denouncing America as a failed social experiment.
How do we tell this story in a way that builds the kind of emotional momentum that colorblind ideology builds?
So many young brothers and sisters of the younger generation find themselves so far removed from the best of their past.
What are we going to make out of the nothing we've been given? How do you envision possibility?
Hey, everyone. Welcome to The Tightrope. I'm here with my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Cornel West, and we're really delighted that you're here joining us. We have a special edition of The Tightrope here where we're trying to give some time to really discuss what's recently been in the news regarding Dr. West's non-tenured appointment at Harvard and their apparent refusal to offer him tenure. And I think, you know, The Tightrope is the kind of place where we want to have an open, frank, and meaningful conversation about the broader context for this. So Cornel, it's really good to see you and of course to be with you as always.
Always a blessing for me, my dear sister Tricia. Indeed, indeed.
Yes, well, this has been a bit of a trying week or so, I'm sure. Let's sort of tell people basically what has happened and just the basics for a minute. Cause I mean, although we're acutely aware, some of our tightrope people may not be fully appraised. So what exactly happened, Cornel?
Well, the backdrop is that I've been in the academy 44 years. I've lived a very blessed life in the academy and outside, teaching in prisons, community churches, mosques, synagogues, and others. And I received tenure at Yale. And we were there together at Yale, 1984. Yep. That's 37 years ago. And I became a university professor at Princeton, university professor at Harvard first. That was back in 1997. And then I had a big clash with Brother Larry Summers, where he had made, vicious attacks on my integrity, attempt to devalue my work and scholarship, and lies about my teaching and grading, right, and what have you. So I just figured I had to go because I was raised that way. That's West family, that's Shiloh Baptist Church. That's Black radical tradition. You only put up with a certain small amount of attack and assault. And when it moves toward disrespect, right, you either go or you have to respond in other ways. And I decided to go. And so when I returned back again, that was 2017, I was offered a non-tenured position. They had no other options whatsoever. I was then out of a job and I needed to be able to make a move to the Boston area. And so I took the position, and it's a 5-year position. It's a position that changes over time. Mm-hmm. It's non-tenured. You got wonderful people who are professor practices, but yet many of whom don't even have PhDs. So you can imagine, to come back to Harvard, having been a university professor at the highest level, right, and then been non-tenured, you can imagine, the lower salary, the lower resources and so forth.
Right,
I said,
right,
that's fine. I'm cool. I'm basically at Harvard for intellectual engagement, trying to empower the precious students. But I thought when they would go back over the evaluations,
right,
given the letters that they sent out and the voting, that there might be a chance that I could have some stability, because when you're non-tenured, especially when you're out there and you're saying things that are unpopular and you're outspoken, that you can be let go at any time.
Right, right.
That's just what
well,
it is.
Yes. I mean, two things. One, for those of you who aren't in the deep depths of academia, a university professor is the highest position. It transcends any given department. Whatsoever. Very few scholars have ever received that status. To have that, in two separate places is amazing. Can you tell people what tenure is for? I mean, this gets to your point. I mean, why tenure? What is the important feature of tenure?
Tenure has a certain stability, continuity. It means that you cannot be removed. You supposedly have a freedom. A lot of people who are tenured still are scared and afraid to speak on certain issues. But generally speaking, you have a certain freedom because there's no way that you can ever be pushed out.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a big difference as you get older. Now, a lot of people would say, well, you know, you're 67 years old. You don't need tenure, brother. You've had it before. You're not going to be around that much longer, and you just don't know. Now, other people would say, well, you know, your best work is behind you. And I say, we shall see. I've just been asked to give the Gifford Lectures. And that was given by John Dewey and William James and Alfred North Whitehead and Paul Tillich and Reinhold Niebuhr and Jeffrey Stout and others. These are towering figures. So I've got a whole lot to say in Edinburgh, Scotland at the Gifford Lectures in about 2.5 years. So they can't use that. And they can't use the academic criteria either because of of my past. So I just asked them, I said, well, is it possible just to be put up for tenure? And that's exactly what the recommendation of the faculty committee was.
Oh, so the faculty committee that was reviewing your renewal recommended that you be put up for tenure.
That's exactly right. Why? Because when they received the letters, the people were saying around the world, we had no idea that Wes is not tenure. How could
this
how
is
could
a this discussion?
Yeah, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. He's been out there so long. He's been tenured at Yale. He's been tenured at Princeton. He's been tenured at Harvard before. And they said, well, other people have had to do that. I said, that's not true. They have had university professors. They've had tenured professors leave Harvard, go somewhere for 10 years, come back. Nobody even thought about having them undergo tenure again. Exactly. Right. Nobody even thought about it. Never even occurred to them. So right. I asked the deans, what was the problem? And they said the tenure process would be too fraught. It would be too risky. And I said, well, what's fraught and risky about it? Controversial. What's controversial about it? It's either age, but that couldn't be the case.
Yeah, the professors the run on the elder that. Side.
Yeah, and I am growing old, and, you know, I'm running out of gas, but I've still got a whole lot
no,
of
energy. No, you're not running out of gas.
Lord, Lord. And it couldn't be academic criteria. Mm-hmm. And so it must be political. And I said, well, it's not my support of Brother Bernie Sanders. That's not it. Mm-hmm. What could it possibly be? Then I look back at the recent past, because, you know, Harvard has had 5 Black professors leave in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And 2 brilliant scholars have been denied tenure. One's a Black Dominican sister. Mm-hmm. Sharp. Mm-hmm. Critique of U.S. Empire. Mm-hmm. U.S. Invasion of Dominican Republic.
Right, Pena.
Mm-hmm. That's right, our dear sister Pena. And then there was also a brilliant Jewish Israeli sister who was denied tenure because of her critique of the Israeli occupation. Mm-hmm. And most people who look at that case know that that was a political decision. It was wrong. Mm-hmm. So I said to myself, I wonder whether it's outspokenness for my precious Palestinian brothers and sisters under Israeli occupation. And I've said over and over again, there was a Palestinian occupation of precious Jews. I'm with the oppressed group. In that case, my precious Jewish brothers. So if there's Israeli occupation of Palestinians, I'm with my precious Palestinians because it's a moral and spiritual issue. But the problem is that it is a taboo issue among certain circles in high places. It's hard to have a robust, respectful conversation about Israel, the Israeli occupation, because you're immediately viewed as anti-Jewish hater, or or you got anti-Jewish prejudices, or you're anti-Semitic, or what have you. And I said, that's ridiculous. So yes, we've got to fight any hatred against our Jewish brothers and sisters. Yes, we got to fight any attempt to degrade Jewish brothers and sisters. But Palestinians have exactly the same value as Jews. And say, and people say, well, now you're not just making it political, but somehow you're trying to charge these Jewish elites with you not getting tenure. I said, well, it's true in this particular instance that you do have Jewish administrators. Now, that doesn't mean that they somehow, every Jew doesn't agree with them. Right. I got a whole wave of Jewish comrades and Jewish brothers and sisters who are very critical of Israeli occupation, but not in high places.
Mm-hmm.
not in high places. Now, again, this was my hypothesis, because given the possibilities of why they would not even be interested in initiating a tenure process, what else could it be? And I asked him, I asked to meet with the president. Never received a reply.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Mm-hmm. And so at that point, you know, it's just a matter of not just being disrespected, but most importantly, you know, you want to send a sign to the younger generation of Black right. scholars that you shouldn't be surprised by disrespect, but you don't put up with it, and you fight it, and you fight it in a variety of different ways. Either you stay or you decide to go, but you don't go into the night silently. You've right. got to put a public spotlight on what is going on so that the next generation can be much more empowered mm-hmm. in this regard. Because we got too many Black professors who are too comfortable mm-hmm. and they're too conformist. And William James was right when he said the very role of higher education is to be a critical counterweight to greed, contempt, callousness, and conformity. He's absolutely right. And I've been right. shaped by the best of Harvard, even as I engage in what I perceive to be now its spiritual and intellectual bankruptcy at the moment. It can change. Mm-hmm. That's right. what it is right now.
Right. Well, see, what's important, you know, one of the things that's important that you're talking about here is the necessity to challenge, you know, this kind of political, potential political motivation for denying you tenure, because if it's not this, it could be you support Malcolm X, or it could be you support, you know, Martin Luther King at a certain point, or you support Black Lives Matter. It could be any number of things that That's could right. end up on the wrong side of a political situation. And when that can't be severed from the body of work, as well as your commitment to meaningful, serious dialogue with anybody. I mean, anybody who knows you knows that you're the least ideological, dogmatic person, you know, with political commitments in the public eye. So, you know, here it isn't just about what this content might be, you know, I mean, for me, it's less about what the suspicions might be and more about the fact that clearly there's a kind of intimidation. They want you to be there. They're happy to have you around. They want you to give convocations. They want you to teach lots of students, but they want to be able to keep a certain kind of distance and not be and basically reserve the right to decide that you should go at any time. And that I think is that's a message. I read that as a real message.
But I think there's a difference between tolerating me and allowing me to teach wonderful students at Harvard. We just had graduate students and undergraduate students writing these powerful statements of my support. It's one thing to tolerate me, and it's another thing to officially sanction my mm-hmm. tenure status
right.
because then the president, the provost must take full responsibility for my presence there. You see?
Right.
And for they would rather have me go through the back door. See, I'm not a back door going kind of brother. They got the wrong Black man. Mm-hmm. That if I can't be a free Black man in the way in which I can preserve my self-respect, mm-hmm. then I'm not going to be at a place like that.
Right,
anyway,
right.
That's yeah. just the way it is.
Yeah, and I think it's important. I think, you know, I can imagine, and I've seen some comments on Twitter, you know, he can go wherever he wants, you know, why fight with Harvard? But I think you've made a really important case here that this is not really about that. It's really about, you know, using the leverage that you have to garner attention, to reveal to people what is the dirty business of, you know, institutions of higher education. And you know, the fact that although tenure is a kind of antiquated process that's a holdover from a very different kind of economic system, it's absolutely critical because for precisely this reason. What may not be popular at any given moment may nonetheless be critically important, verifiably true, perhaps, right? Depending on the situation.
That's right. That's right. No, that's absolutely
free to
right.
discuss that. Go ahead, Cornell.
No, but you just have to have certain lines in the sand, it seems to me, when it comes to self-respect. And that's why I've made it very clear that when deans came back to me and they realized they were more and more in trouble, they started increasing my salary because my salary had been so low. And they started offering me chairs, you know, the Thomas chair, the Niebuhr chair. And I told them, I said, you know, this is not about money. This is not about chairs. Right. I've been here 4 years.
Right.
It's only when your back's against the wall. You see, you can only value me when you're dealing with fear.
Right.
So, oh, I see. I see. Mm. This is about respect and self-respect. You could now give me tons of money. You can give me the biggest chair Harvard has, but you can't negotiate my respect. I mean, and ultimately what that means, I mean, I'll probably just have to leave. I don't think that I can actually stay at a place that that's has that kind of attitude of mm-hmm. disrespect and think they can just buy you off. I mean, that's what I don't like too.
Mm-hmm. You see, yeah.
A brand. Like all I got is a brand. All I want is just money. No, I'm not like that. I got a cause.
Right.
And a cause
right.
is tied to a certain kind of respect. And a respect is tied to a certain kind of calling. And the calling, ironically, is very similar to the best of what I understand Harvard, Howard, Morehouse, UCLA, University of Chicago, and Yale to be, which is a calling to the life of the mind to empower students, fellow citizens, and fellow human beings, unsettle their minds, empower their souls in order to do what? To be a force for truth, for goodness, for beauty, and to do it in such a way that it's a counterweight against the market. It's a counterweight against greed. It's a counterweight against coldness and callousness and corruption. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You can see it in Ralph Waldo Emerson. You can see it in Du Bois. You can see it in Anna Julia Cooper. You can see it in Susan Sontag. Mm-hmm. It's old school and new school, but it is a humanistic conception of education, a right. humanistic conception of vocation. And that's very much what we're losing, because when you look at the university nowadays, so commodified and so bureaucratized, it's donor money, public image, consumer reputation. And by consumer, I mean student reputation.
Right.
Because that's the market, you see.
Right.
And you say, well, you see, I resist that kind of commodification and that yeah. kind of bureaucratization of my vocation. My vocation flies right in the face of it. And that's right. why, you know, usually when I leave these big places, you know, I go to places where my salary gets massively cut.
Right.
Or significantly right. cut. That's what happened when I left Princeton Union Theological Seminary. Now, the beautiful thing about Union Theological Seminary is that they have just activated the Dietrich Bonhoeffer chair. Mm. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, one of the greatest prophetic Christian figures, tried to kill Hitler, assassinate Hitler in the name of love, to push back neo-fascists, a downright Nazi gangster. And it's a chair that was initiated in 1979 when I was a professor. It was initiated by Donald Shriver, who hired me when I was 23 years old.
Wow.
And he brought together the Center of Black Theological Education, mm-hmm. James Cone, James Washington, James Forbes, Wallin Dotson, Samuel Roberts, and myself. And he has just helped activate the Dietrich Bonhoeffer chair with his unbelievable gift from his pension.
Well, and, he donated his pension to
every penny
to endow the Bonhoeffer chair. Wow.
Exactly. He's 92 years old. I just wrote the introduction, Essays in His Honor. And we just had the tribute to him. And he and I are going to be at Columbia actually in April. But it's just the timing of it. It hits me so hard.
Mm-hmm.
That given all
right.
of this mess I'm going through, and Union's always been a perennial home for me. And a lot of people say, well, Brother West, you need to go to Howard. You need to go to Prayer View. We love Ruth Simmons.
Yes,
you need
indeed.
To go
yes,
to the Morehouse and so forth. And I understand that. I can understand that. But I mean, one, I haven't gotten the offers, but I mean, even if I did, I think I would probably want to stay in the Northeast. But There's been some magnificent people at Brown University.
I know. You know, I told you come to Brown any day.
I know. You've been on the move. My brother Lucius Outlaw and brother Paul Taylor said, hey, think about Vanderbilt. And my dear brother Robbie George at Princeton, he moved immediately to say, hey, come to Princeton, my brother. And folk at Dartmouth, I mean, I've been blessed to have a number of things to fall back on. But the crucial thing is, one, we've got to put an end or some way of rendering accountability anybody who devalues, disrespects, and dismisses Black scholars or Black intellectuals.
Right, right.
That's the crucial thing.
Right.
And the second thing is, we've got to have robust, respectful dialogue on taboo issues, no matter what they are.
Exactly.
In my case,
I mean,
I'm pretty sure it has to do with Israeli occupation. We got to do it a variety of different issues. You have to be able to engage these issues in such a way that you don't demonize one side or the other.
Right, right. I mean, you know, look, it's a very polarizing and polarized time right now.
That's true. You have to
have, as an institution, a lot of, you know, fortitude and a real vision about not just avoiding controversy and avoiding risk, but knowing what's at stake around the meaning of a true engagement and a deep engagement on ideas. That requires, you know, a set of values that Harvard apparently may not have. And I mean, I'm surprised they haven't said anything yet publicly about it. And I'm not sure what their explanation is going to be able to be. If the faculty committee who reviewed you said this should be the outcome, that should be the standard, right? That is usually the point. The faculty are the ones who know this, you know, whether or not someone should be awarded tenure, and certainly external reviewers. So, you know, it's very unfortunate situation. I think people also feel, you know, you have given so much to all your students. I mean, for people who don't know, Cornell is an unbelievable teacher. Just, I mean, enthralling, capacious, curious, patient. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, you see yourself as a first year and you're like, what did I ask? You know, I'm sure there's many a person who, you know, but you're always such a, love, you know, you love, push love. People in the right way. I mean, you're just magnificent. And, you know, that's what we're here to do. And, you know, to see you be treated this way, right? You know, it's bad enough for anybody, right? But I do think for many of us, it feels like, wow, okay, if they can do that to Cornell, the rest of us out here, I mean, we don't stand a chance, right? We're going to get mowed down.
We need
each other. Down like some tall grass.
We need each other. I mean, the irony is, when I think back now and I think of my teachers at Harvard here, like Martin Kielsen and Preston Williams, John Rawls, Hillary Putnam, Stanley Cavell, Martha Nussbaum. She was also denied tenure at Harvard, which was
right.
Ridiculous.
There's a lot of brilliant people who've been there, but
you weren't denied it.
You see, this is different.
But
Cornell.
That's true. That's different. That's true.
See,
that's
because
true.
They actually gave it to you. They were.
That's true. Now that
so
is
that
good,
is
that's
actually
good,
more for me. It's more politically questionable. You've
yes.
already extended it. So now either you're saying you were wrong before. Now
that's
you got to
right.
justify that, right? Or you're right, you're
true.
Wrong now, and you got to justify that.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a very good point. But those are the teachers who gave me so much.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Sheldon Wolins and Richard Rohrdies and Walter Kaufmans and Tim Scanlons and Tom Nagels and Gregory Vlastos. I mean, all of these folk, I mean, this is the best of Harvard, Princeton, and Yale, the wonderful figures at Yale. But so on the one hand, you got wonderful folk there. But on the other hand, you know, you got the handbook. And the handbook says these are the procedures and rules, right? But everybody knows that on the ground, a whole host of things are taking place. Same is true in terms of we believe in a robust conversation. No, not all the time. No,
yep.
You don't. You got a consensus. You got an orthodoxy. You have a certain kind of a dogmatism that you think is flexible and fluid on certain issues. And it's also, I think, possibly tied to the donors.
Mm-hmm.
The donors. And see, when you talk about Israeli occupation, you're not just talking about Jewish donors at all. We're not talking first and foremost about Jewish money. You're talking about the money elite who are Jewish, non-Jewish, Black, white, red, whatever, who do have a certain kind of tilt on that issue.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's an issue that cuts across a whole host of different groups in that regard. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, you know, if we don't fight whatever the taboo issue is, then I think we're in trouble. And we know we're in trouble. I mean, these neoliberal institutions are just so tied to image and cash flow and consumer reputation that it loses the real calling of what a university is about. That's the sad.
Black Studies has been facing this from the beginning, right? This effort to fighting to bring certain issues into the academy, which was the result of the Black radical tradition and the long civil rights movement. And once these programs get established, they don't have tenure they can't grant tenure in their own departments. They have to go for a long, long time going elsewhere to get tenure. And over time, you know, a kind of professionalized narrative and approach takes hold. And you have places where a certain kind of, you know, serious, significant, challenging conversation about these issues is not really happening. You know, I just think it's important for people to remember that, you know, this, for me, this is about the emblematic nature of a bigger problem.
Absolutely.
That is important because I'm not 100% sure what their motivation is. I mean, I don't know. It could be Obama. I mean, you have a lot of beef with Obama.
I got a lot of foes and enemies in high places. Now, the Christian, of course, I love my enemies, but I don't love the behavior of my enemies. I don't love their deeds. And I decided a long time ago, my dear sister, that I was not going to allow anything under God's heaven to get into way of my expressions of my free mind and my solidarity with oppressed people here and around the world. Now, I'm not perfect. I'm not pure. But that is a fundamental conviction.
That's right.
So if I end up on the corner, broke as the Ten Commandments, I'm going to be a free Black man, and I'm going to be speaking my mind, and I'll be able to align myself based on my morality and spirituality with any group whatsoever. And as you know, that gets me in trouble with Black folk, you know, with Obama.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think this is why it's important on principle to defend the position that you're in and to respond and to ask for, you know, some real clarification. I think higher education has a real problem on its hands. You know, it ushered in this whole, you know, market economy, and, you know, that this question of popularity and donor-based support means ideas now catered to powerful people more often than not.
That's exactly right.
Not that it was ever entirely all that different in the Ivy League to begin with, you know, I mean, but it does feel a bit more in seriousness. Sorry, go ahead, Cornell.
No, I was just saying you can look at some of these schools of public policy and say, how many courses do they have on racism and poverty, sexism and poverty, homophobia and poverty? That's not political correctness. We're talking about precious human beings who find themselves in the bottom echelons of our society, the richest in the world. And we're supposed to be concerned with Harvard, with Veritas, truth, the condition of truth is to allow suffering to speak. Oh no, because oftentimes the funds going in a different direction.
Right. So there's a big institute for, you know, security.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, whose security are we actually talking
whose
about?
Whose security are you talking about? Exactly.
Yeah, you're not talking about poor people's security.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what's the next step for you here?
Your deep love and support, you and Brother Andre's love and support. You all have been loving me and supporting me for decade after decade after decade. And these are the times where you do find out who your friends are. You know what I mean? You really do.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's sad. You know, sometimes we think that people are our friends, you know, and truth be told, not everybody is as brave as you are and, you know, or feels that they can withstand the heat. I mean, it's a lot of heat that you are able to take. You got a little asbestos, you know, lining going on. You can take a lot of fire there, brother. You know,
so, I got the Holy Ghost. I got the Holy Ghost. Jesus makes a difference. You
know, all right. Well, you need to start sharing him.
Oh, no. I share my Jesus.
I mean? But I guess what I'm saying.
But friends make a big, and family, my God.
Yeah. But you have, though, you just have that capacity. That's your, you know, you, that's how you came. I think, you know, reading, you know, Brother West out loud, that's your, you just came that way. And that's a brilliant, wonderful thing. But it is, it's both good to see who your friends are. And of course, we'll always be your friends, you know, ride or die. But at the same time, you know, it's hard to see people at least not tell you the truth about what they think the situation is. Like, to me, even if you're not going to do anything publicly, you need to be able to say, look, bro, you know, this absolutely. Is whatever it is, you know,
absolutely. And your friends don't have to agree with you. Some of my closest
That's
partners
true.
Say, Brother West, man, I'm not sure I wholly agree, but I love you to death. And I said, oh, that's a beautiful thing, because I've got right. some partners who I always disagree with, but we partners till the end.
Right.
And
right.
That's the bottom line, because they, you know, they're pulling for your well-being, not just for your particular position.
And they're saying, I mean, I think this is the point. Now, if you had gone and, you know, were part of a terrorist cell and you had done something heinous and hard, we'd be like, okay, he's breached the ethical moral standards
Absolutely.
Of the institution. That's another situation. But we don't have that situation. We have literally no explanation. Basically, you're doing what academics are supposed to be doing. And, you know, apparently that's too much academia going on. That's too much risk, too much, you know, heat. So, you know, but, you know, we all, I'm sure everybody's called you. I think you probably have 49 new jobs in the last week.
Well, I've been, you know. been blessed for that. And I've got, you know, hundreds of emails and things. So, I mean, a lot of the love is there. But again, in the end, it may sound crazy, but it's not really about me. You know, in the end, it's about trying to create context in higher education where people can lift their voices and speak and argue and generate, put forward their stories and narratives and visions
right.
in such a way that you actually both have an argument and then fight this massive, these massive forms of just disrespecting Black folk.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever, on the corner. In the suite, in the university, on the job. I mean, we have to be vigilant.
I mean, look, Cornell, I know we always say this. We say it, if this person had been, you know, white, this would have never happened. But there is no chance that I can see someone of your stature with your accomplishments and the contributions you've made on the page, in conversation, around the world, in the classroom, and not be provided with tenure or not the second time. Let me just leave it at that. Just, you know, it's just impossible to imagine. And, you know, and that's another sort of twist of the knife around the disrespect.
That's real. That's real. And there you raise legal issues when you think about it. And that's probably what the university is most afraid of.
Say because more. What do you mean?
University's most afraid about their money. They're most afraid about their image and reputation. And
right.
they're most afraid about a legal suit.
Mm-hmm.
Because a legal suit affects both. You see?
Right.
And, you know, and it is what it is. You know, it is what it is. I mean, I got work to do. I mean, I keep so busy trying to serve. You know, that Negro spiritual keeps so busy. Keep so busy working for the kingdom, ain't got time to die. I'm a ain't got time kind of brother. I ain't got mm-hmm. time for this mess. I ain't got time for this pettiness. I got too much work to do.
My
brother Charles Barron in Brooklyn, we got work to do. With my brother Mark Willie Thomas out in California, we got work to do. There's so many different contexts where we're dealing with projects, trying to empower people. We got work to do. We don't have time for this kind of pettiness.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just stay strong and, you know, let us know at the tightrope and what we can do. And, you know, what also, you know, all students should really be questioning the institution. And we should all be thinking about, you know, what are we doing this for? You know, is it just a bureaucratic, you know, process where people just get degrees and get stamped and, you know, leave town, or are we willing to really ask the hard questions? So
that's crucial. You got to get your personal calling and vocation in place. You got to be part of the best of a tradition. And then I hope you're calling for fundamental transformation across the board in the name of poor and working people.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's hoping. I know you're busy. You got work to do. So I don't want to keep it, brother, from
Thank you.
Yeah, so we'll follow up again, Cornell, next time we get on the tightrope together. We'll see how you're doing. I mean, I know you'll be fine. You'll land great, but you know, we don't want you taking any more hits out here. So
no.
Keep that to a minimum.
Always love and respect you, my dear sister. I'm telling
you. Cornell. Appreciate you. And listen, everybody out there, we just wanted to have a conversation about this instead of having everybody else have opinions. I wanted to hear from Cornell on the situation. And also, there's an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education where he also lays out on the page in conversation with Maximilian Alvarez, you know, what his concerns are, what the situation is. So check that out, too. And I'm Tricia Rose. This is Dr. Cornell West. Thank you for joining us on The Tightrope, and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye now.